Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinati Kuma, and joining me to wrap this week up are Rikus Reeders from PSG Reimsig and Caroline Krimen from AdviceWorks. Thank you to the both of you for joining us. I want to start with you, Caroline. So we had the markets kind of nervous and rattled by the controversial visit by US House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan. Quite surprising though how markets turned around a day later and basically kind of shrugged it off. I'm interested if you were paying attention to the kind of escalation and the implications maybe of that and also the de-escalation.
Well, if I must be honest with you, I think it depends on your political views. I just looked at this as China's not going to cause a war over a visit. You know, I don't think you're sitting with a Putin type of situation. You know, China is really trying to integrate itself into the world economy. They've seen what has happened to Russia. I don't think, you know, that they're going to make any moves. You know, they're going to save a rattle, but I don't think they were going to make any moves that was really going to jeopardize themselves and their economy, you know, at a time when global growth is slowing. So I looked at it that way, and I thought you're going to see lots of hot air and a few missiles flying here and there.
Yeah.
But it would subside when she was gone.
Rikus, are you also interpreting it as hot air? I mean, just today we saw China sanctioning Nancy Pelosi and her immediate family, and then they also had some military drills around Taiwan. Hot air, or is it maybe, because I mean, just, you know, Viv Govender actually said a very interesting point earlier on that in January, if somebody had told you that Russia was going to invade Ukraine, nobody would have believed it. What's your take?
Nobody would have believed it, but that fear is always in the background. So sometimes politicians say something and then they actually execute it, which is exactly what happened with Putin, because he's been preparing for what's happened in the Ukraine for a long time and he's been saying so. So there's obviously a geopolitical tension between China and the US. As I've always said, it's not so much military as it is in IT. You know, there's an IT war that's been going on for a very long time between the US and China, and sometimes you need a bit of saber rattling just to reinforce your role on the political stage, in as much as there's a heck of a lot of change happening at the moment, almost back to the Cold War. So if you've got two opponents, now and again they have to remind each other that they are serious about their specific role, not so much only in economic terms, but also in geopolitical terms.
And does that then kind of make you question an investment or go into an investment into, like, for example, Chinese chip companies with caution? Because, I mean, I guess that would be one of the things that it could affect. Caroline?
Yeah, so, you know, Taiwan Semiconductor, I think, is probably at issue here. Yes, it does worry me quite a bit. You know, I don't think that there's going to be an invasion imminent, but certainly it is a company that is at risk. It puts the world at risk because it's one of the biggest suppliers. I think, you know, it does actually put me off in investing in that specifically. Starting a lot of investments by governments. You saw the U.S. come out of the semiconductor package that will assist, you know, homegrown, home-built semiconductors. So I would probably be focusing my attention there, which is a real pity because Taiwan Semiconductors really is a fabulous, fabulous company. But I think when you've got an alternative, I would definitely take the alternative.
Yeah, on your side, Rikus, TSMC, that's actually been quite a firm favorite when you look at the chip makers. I mean, would that make you then invest in competitors?
Yeah, I agree with Caroline. I would rather focus on people who do their manufacturing in a more stable environment. You know, even TSMC has just opened up busy building a plant in America. I think it's Texas, if I'm not mistaken. So they're also shifting their geopolitical risk. But yeah, in broad terms, agree with Caroline. If I'm not in the middle of some kind of conflict, then I'm a happy investor.
All right, a topic that has been debated for I think the last week or two is the question is the U.S. in a recession or not. We spoke about it a little bit yesterday, Caroline, just off the back of comments from James Bullard, a Fed official, saying that a recession is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, what really matters here?
Look, I think what really matters, what actually fascinates me as well, is that at the last Fed meeting, they said they weren't going to give forward guidance. And then literally a few days after that, you've got pretty much every Fed regional chief coming out and warning people that there might not be a recession, but one is potentially looming.
Yeah.
So what you can read from that is that they're definitely seeing that the risks are on the uptick. Now, looking at what happened yesterday with the Bank of England, you know, it was an absolutely catastrophic announcement, you know, that they made 13% inflation, they're going to have a recession for 5 quarters, end of year, and the whole of 2023. So, you know, so you have to ask yourself, are they being alarmist, or are they actually reading into what is happening in the market that other central banks won't really admit for, you know, in case they spook the market and essentially talk their countries into a recession? But what I take from it is that they're looking at things, central banks everywhere, and saying, look, everybody, just hold fire. Things are not as good as they can be. They're not as bad as they can be either, but the risks are to the downside.
Yeah. On your side, Rick, does it matter what we're calling it?
I think it does. I think I'll start off with what Caroline is saying. Is, you know, the more you talk about recession, the more likely it is to happen, because it feeds on itself. In other words, it just feeds on sentiment. And if you're pessimistic about the future, you're not going to invest.
Yeah.
So there seems to be this push and pull between, you know, how much is inflation going to be, how much is growth going to be. And certainly the central banks have been getting it wrong, so there's no reason why they're going to get it right going forward. Mm-hmm. So what they say affects sentiment rather than relying on their forecasts, I think, for the moment. They mostly get it wrong, but in this instance, from last year to now, they've got it spectacularly wrong. Mm. So you really cannot rely, and it's not really their fault, because, as I've said, they're not getting it right in the best of times. It's just par for the course, and this time it's landed in the MRF itself. It influences what my stock pick is later in this, you know, in this program.
Okay.
And I think everybody's forgetting the third horse, which only happens about 20% of the time, and that's stagflation. I think that's probably more where we're heading towards, you know, sort of the late 60s type of global, 1960s type of global environment.
Yeah. All right. Sticking with the global theme, there's a question here from a viewer. If your guest had $5,000 to punt on any overseas stocks or ETF, which two would they choose? This is punt money, 10 bagger or bust. No problem either way. $5,000, any two, stock or ETF, anything. Caroline.
Well, I'm going to be a huge disclaimer here, because as a house, this is not something we hold.
Yeah.
So
it's a punt,
so
yeah.
First of all, an exchange, it's a punt.
And yeah.
So please come looking for me. I think my punt on the exchange traded fund would be a uranium exchange traded fund, because I do think this energy crisis is going to force people to go more into the nuclear field.
Mm.
And my stock pick would be a company called Wolfspeed, and that's just simply because I'm a complete tech nerd. This is not a stock to put your whole money in. Please, if you've got that 5,000 rand hanging around and you're quite happy to lose it, this might be a good investment. It's burning cash. It's not profitable. This is a high risk but potential high return stock. This is the company. We've seen a move from silicon chips to silicon carbide chips. Silicon carbide chips use less energy, and they can be smaller. So they're being increasingly used in electronic vehicles and industrial. And this is really the way, you know, we're probably going into a silicon carbide chips super cycle. And this is, you know, this is the first mover.
Yeah.
So Wolfspeed for me.
Okay. All right. I get you. Yeah. And yeah, the viewer did say this is punt money, bag or bust. On your side, Rikus?
Okay, not going to get a 10-bagger in ETFs. That's pretty difficult. I think 10-bagger wise, stock is a pick I've had before. It's called Grid Gresham, Industrial Energy Fund or whatever. They do battery additional supply in the UK, for municipalities. Now, if you've got a going forward, they deliver or to the load when necessary. Also a pretty new kind of fund. And on the exchange traded fund side, for the longer term, I've punted this one before, as well as is the Satrix India fund, and that's because I'm worried about China having, I think they are post export growth and they're going to focus internally, and India is the kind of development or developing economy that is export driven, and they might take over that role in the future. I'm talking 5 or 6 years from now.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into local companies. So there's a question here on a junior coal miner, MC Mining. Is MC Mining worth looking at? Caroline?
Well, the share price has popped, because they came out with a trading statement, a cautionary saying that they're looking at additional funding, which will fund additional ventures. Yes, it's interesting to look at. I'm not sure if I would be buying in the current environment. I think coal is if you saw Glencore results, you saw the benefits of actually having a coal investment. So I think it's interesting to look at to see how their results are coming out. It'll be interesting to see how well they've done in the current environment, where they should have had tailwinds from this. From being a coal producer in South Africa, and I tend to be very skeptical about this, it's one thing to produce coal for export. It's another thing to get it down to the ports and out of South Africa. And even bigger players will tell you that, infrastructure is in a mess. And that's going to eat into people's profits, even if they can get it out of the country. Yeah. So I would be cautious, because despite of the fact that you've got the coal tailwinds and it might be very well run, all of our infrastructure issues just could come back and erode those margins.
Mm. And I'm wondering, Rikus, if you want to invest in coal, because, at this time we've seen the upside of, the prices with the energy crunch, although there are challenges in terms of getting the coal out of the country, but seeming like a good place to be in right now. So would you go in for MC Mining as more of a cheap entry point into coal? Because looking at companies such as Glencore, Thungela, that prices run away. So would this be a good cheap entry point into coal?
Yeah, I think if you're a speculator, if I can use that word, it is interesting. Long-term investment, well, resources are never a long-term investment. They're always tradable things. So I'd be hesitant probably to go into something that's that volatile at this point in the resource cycle. But the thing with MC Mining is, as far as I know, they have been sort of forced to switch to exports. I don't think they've had any offtake from their main customer in South Africa over the past 12 months. Mm. And although it is difficult to export, and I know absolutely nothing as to how Richards Bay allocates space, I would imagine that for a small player like MC Mining, any export is immediately beneficial to their bottom lines. I mean, it just makes sense. If you're a company that has to export or that's producing 100 tons of coal, it's going to be more difficult to export than a company that just produces 1 ton of coal. So the size and volume that we're dealing with as far as MC Mining is concerned, I don't know how rich this may allocate, but it might make it easier to actually get something on a ship as far as MC Mining is concerned.
Mm. All right. A very interesting question coming from a viewer about multi-choice. Of course, there's always that debate around Netflix versus multi-choice versus Disney. So, the viewer says there's talk of multi-choice losing high premium paying customers to Netflix. But if you drive past any lower income housing areas and even squatter camps, all you can notice are thousands of white satellite dishes. These customers may be on the cheaper options, but they are never switching away from DStv to Netflix, as they won't be able to afford the fiber prices. Imagine this is the same scenario in the rest of Africa. Surely this makes MultiChoice a utility type share that is X growth but with a stable future income and a fantastic dividend, especially for Putuma Nati shareholders. Your view, Caroline?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a utility just yet. MultiChoice, really breaks their customers down into three groups. You've got the premium group, and then you've got the lower end, you know, which is what you're seeing when you drive along the highways. Then you've got that mid-tier. Now, you know, you have been seeing loss from the premium tier to that mid-tier. It does affect them financially. Obviously, premium, you're paying an enormous amount of money for for multiple channels. You've seen their subscription revenue is 82% of the business, but their subscriber base grew 5%, but their revenue only grew 3%. So there is a bit of cannibalization. I think what MultiChoice has in to their advantage is that, you know, as an African player, they can compete really almost without, you know, any type of competition within Africa. We've seen them start to produce a lot more local content, a lot of regional content in the other African countries. They've got about 70,000 hours now of local content in their library. They have licensing deals, which are long-term. Sony, they've just signed with Sony for 3 years. So even though they're losing premium subscribers, their loss seems to be stabilizing, and the revenue that they're getting from that mid-tier is growing. So there's also potential issues for the, you know, the Netflix and the Disney that you can actually get either through your fiber or through the MultiChoice or through the Dakota platform. And it's something that ICASA is probably going to be looking at. They've reopened the probe into the pay TV market in South Africa in May. And there's a couple of issues that they're probably going to have with these companies. First of all, they want to see them pay South Africa tax. You know, it's very difficult for MultiChoice to compete if they are forced to have local content. But these guys, you know, who can take away their lunch, are not forced to have local content. And then, you know, the government is probably going to want to see what BEE, you know, transactions can, you know, can be taken from that. So there might be headwinds coming for the guys who are trying to, you know, eat into MTN's, MultiChoice. So I don't think it's a utility. I think it's a strong company. It's got strong revenue. It's got strong customer base. I think the loss to the lower ends is stabilizing, but the growth into Africa is still, there's still enormous potential there for me.
Okay. Rikus, would you say that the pie is big enough for all of them at this point in Africa?
No, I think Caroline is precisely on point with what she says, and whoever asked that question is precisely on point as far as fiber is concerned. I think MultiChoice is going to steal on the fiber companies, as she said. Or as he said, fiber is simply too small in Africa at the moment to make things like Netflix seriously competitive with MultiChoice. And that's not going to change very soon. So I agree with Caroline. MultiChoice still has a lot to do in Africa and will continue to gain support specifically as far as local and regional content is concerned. I think people overestimate the danger that your big cable guys or, you know, things like Netflix or Disney has on MultiChoice.
Yeah, so Disney and Netflix are not the death of MultiChoice, essentially.
No. Not yet.
Yeah, all right. Let's take a look at other questions. Remgro's revised offer for Mediclinic. How generous is it? I know Caroline spoke to you yesterday, and you said that you'd be with the board. They did make a unanimous decision that it is, But now you have reports coming in and saying that minority shareholders could actually fight for a better price. Do you think that they could succeed?
Look, you know, when you look at a valuation of a company, you're not only looking at the business as it is now, you're looking at the business as it is then. And I think, you know, I think it is a generous price based on the business it is now, because some of the growth that you need to unlock from that business going forward is, as RemGrow and MCS have said, is going to be difficult to unlock while it's a listed business and you're having to comply with all the regulations in a public market. You know, so it's a bit, you know, disingenuous of a minority shareholder to come and say, we want that growth that you wouldn't get if you weren't listed in our price.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I'm not in favor of them. The money's good. Take the money. Walk away.
Okay. So I actually want to ask you, Rikus, on the RemGrow side, because, I mean, we know the kind of corporate activity that they've been ramping up to unlock that value as an investment holding company. We saw that with Distell and now with Mediclinic. So I'm wondering how much more upside you see in RemGrow, and you can also add anything you want to add on the Mediclinic front if it's a good enough offer as well.
Well, adding, you know, there's a reason why RemGrow is buying Mediclinic, and there's probably a reason why RemGrow spun out Rainbow Chickens. They know what they should keep and what they should spun out to ensure this. So I think it makes RemGrow as an investment company more attractive, and I think this is also the most dynamic I've seen RemGrow in a decade. In other words, as far as corporate action is concerned. So I think, as an investment company with increasingly attractive assets, it's not some place that I wouldn't want to be. In that sense, pretty positive about it.
All right. Here's another question. Sappi and Mondi both came out with excellent results yesterday. They've successfully managed to increase prices in the face of cost pressures, although they are cautiously upbeat about the outlook. Is the panel seeing any divergence, though, between the two companies, Caroline? Mondi and Sappi?
No, not really. You know, there's a lot of overlap and then there's a lot of non-overlap. You know, it's always difficult to, you know, to kind of differentiate between the two. I think previously the differentiator for most people was that Sappi had a lot of debt.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was immediately, we'll discard Sappi and pick Mondi, which is the quality play. I think that thesis is out the window now. You know, Sappi has reduced their debt. We are seeing, you know, the company's a very, very different company. So, you know, it's really just going to, and the paper market, you know, is relatively stable, but they're different drivers at different points in time. So at times you can be right with Sappi and times you can be right with Mondi.
Okay.
Hit your bets. Take a little bit of both.
Yeah. You know, Caroline, I speak to a lot of different people because this is an ongoing debate between Sappi and Mondi. And you take a look at some of the guys that have been around for a very long time, and they won't go anywhere near Sappi because of the history with the debt. I mean, looking at these results that we've been seeing for the past two quarters, I mean, have they changed your mind in any way, or have they reinforced your thinking on Sappi?
No, look, they said that they were going to turn this around. I think this is it was an industry aversion to actually going in there. And I think that they really have turned that situation around very, very nicely. And, you know, the paper market, you know, it is, you know, one would have sort of, you know, like, computers think that there was the death of this, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're still seeing that demand for boxes and all the packaging that we use just grow. So it's a nice part of the commodity space to be in because it's relatively less volatile than something like gold or platinum.
Yeah.
So I'm prepared to do, when you've made it a big change to your company for the good.
Yeah.
You know, you need to give them the benefit of the doubt because this is, you know, it's a good management team that would do that. So I'm prepared to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Rikus, Sappi, the benefit of the doubt. And just in addition to that, I mean, would you be seeing Mondi as maybe less cyclical than Sappi as well, considering the exposure to e-commerce packaging?
I mean, that's one of the reasons I've liked Mondi, is I think they've got more innovative products than Sappi. Mm. Except obviously Mondi is now sitting with 20% of their earnings problem in Russia, which I see they haven't impaired at all. So I think Yeah. I'm probably being a bit cynical, but they have the Russian operations as marked for sale until they get an offer. I don't think they are going to accept any offer because, again, cynically, they also see war as just one way to get some kind of political settlement. So they don't want to lose that 20% of their assets by selling it for 1 ruble and foregoing any kind of profit that they have, although they might be forced to. Okay. If it really becomes the case that they can't repatriate any income from a country whatsoever. So that's the problem with Mondi at the moment.
All right, definitely a wait and see, Yeah. All right, let's get to your stock pick. 20 seconds for each of you. Caroline.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with one I said today because I'm really feeling very strongly about this. Anglo American, I know the share price has fallen. I know that their results weren't good. I know earnings went down. But, you know, I'm very firm on my commodity. Getting a bit of a commodity exposure, this is an opportunity to do it now. Anglo is in the right space with the right commodities for the future. And it again, this is like he's one of those companies that has turned itself around and is positioned probably better than most companies.
All right. Rikus, your stock pick for today?
It's a overseas exchange traded fund called DJP. It's the IPOF Bloomberg Commodity Index Total Return Fund, which is a huge name for something which is actually very simple. If we are heading for a stagflation, your best sector of performance is normally your broader commodity index. In other words, that will be oils, metals, grains, cattle, whatever. Most commodity funds are heavily weighted towards mining and specifically oil. This specific fund almost has an equal weighting in all 16 sectors with a mandate, say, no more than 12% in anything. So if my thesis is correct that we're going to stagflation, that your broader commodities are going to do the best, but you don't know which one are going to do the best at any specific time, I have something that is equally weighted, and this fund suits that purpose perfectly.
Right, very, very interesting. Well, thank you very much to the both of you for your time and your insights today. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Rikus Reeders from PSG Reimsich and Caroline Kremen from AdviceWorks. From Izanati Kuma and the rest of the team, have a great weekend. Thank you.